Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up President Doug Tuthill speaks with Amy Anderson, Executive Director of Reschool Colorado, an organization focused on modernizing public education with an eye towards the, quote, shadow education system, the learning that happens outside a traditional school day. The two policy innovators go deep, discussing the growing inequity between families with the financial means to access those programs versus those who don't, and how to design public education to change that. What do accountability systems look like? What about the changing role of the teacher? Those questions and more on this episode of Podcast Ed. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So I'm excited to welcome Amy Anderson. Amy is the Executive Director of Reschool Colorado, and I think one of the great innovators in public education in the country and has done great work for many, many years. So it's a real honor for me, Amy, to be able to talk to you. And good to see you again, because I haven't seen you in a while. So that's been exciting for me.
It's great to see you too, Doug. Thanks for inviting me and for your kind words. That's really nice. I think you're one of the great innovators too, actually. We're in good company.
I want to start with sort of the tagline for Reschool Colorado, which is modernizing public education. Talk a little about what that means in terms of the kind of work you guys do.
Yeah, it's anchored around the very start of Reschool, which was back in 2013. And at that time I was working at the Colorado Department of Education. I had previously worked at the Donald K. Foundation, which is where we started Reschool. Right. So I went back to the foundation at that point because there were two things that I was noticing about our system that I think continue to be present today. One of them was that our system had just not kept up with the way society had been evolving, that when you looked at how our structures around classrooms and schools were organized, it was still very much dated. And I didn't feel like kids were being prepared for the world that they were entering into and that something needed to change. And our way of organizing education innovation to date had been largely around rethinking structures around institutions. And I felt like maybe that was the wrong play and we needed to think differently. And so the idea of what would a modernized system look like couldn't be something that we designed in some office building. We had to actually immerse ourselves with community and parents and understand what was working and what wasn't working for them. And so Reschool has committed from the beginning to co-designing an education system that is more relevant for the kids who are entering into it, but also ownership of what that system looks like and how it operates is shared with others from the community, especially those who've been more marginalized over time. So that's what we mean by, a modernized system.
Right. You wrote a very thought-provoking piece the other day in 74, and you talked about, I think, with Julia from the Christensen Institute, you guys really talked about expanding education beyond, brick and mortar, beyond the traditional 180-day. Of course, we've all expanded now beyond brick and mortar. But I want to start talking a little bit about, the future, begin to reimagine public education. Certainly, we've now gone beyond the walls of the school. And certainly in the fall, we're not going to go back at least full time. There's going to be this hybrid model. And so talk a little bit about some of those possibilities, particularly beginning. You're talking a lot about, how do we go into summer school or summer learning options outside of traditional public schools. So start talking about some of the opportunities you see about expanding public education in ways that we haven't thought about in the past and begin to incorporate new kinds of learning opportunities that kids haven't always fully engaged in.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most important learnings that we had at Reschool early on that remains even more relevant in today's world, given the COVID-19 situation, is that learning happens everywhere, right? Yeah. But our education system has been organized around only the learning that happens, which is about 25% of a kid's waking hours in a traditional year in school. And so much of our work at Reschool has actually focused on what is the learning that happens outside of school and how do you make that more equitable and accessible to more kids? So we've done a lot of work over the years to look at things like summer learning providers, online options, other kinds of experiences kids may be having that often don't get recognized as learning, and how do you count those experiences yeah. in ways that are important? And so as we entered into this pandemic, and kids were all of a sudden at home all the time, we never envisioned it to be quite so extreme that you would go from one, you know, to the other.
Right.
But we were well positioned to be able to respond. And so the article with Julia was a result of how we were seeing people around the country who were innovators responding in this moment to make learning accessible to kids while they were at home. And so there's a mix of really incredible things that have happened where learning providers have shifted all of their programming completely to remote learning. And that doesn't necessarily only mean online. Like, there are a lot of providers who have created YouTube channels, and then they accompany those with a kit that kids can have in their home. And so they're interacting in different ways. And then now, as summer has approached and some of the guidelines around being able to gather again in groups have opened up, we're also seeing especially entrepreneurial learning providers that operate in the summer space make some interesting shifts where they're responding in the moment to the needs of families, and which I think is a really important trend as we head into the fall. The more that we can see schools and school systems respond to the needs of families in interesting ways, I think the better kids will have, the better learning that they will have and outcomes that they'll have over time.
How do we more specifically integrate some of these learning options into sort of public education broadly defined? So for example, schools are held accountable for meeting certain standards. You and I both know a lot of those standards can be met outside of a traditional school environment, but we don't really, schools don't get credit for that, or, you know, it doesn't really fit. How do we begin to, when you think about accountability systems, how do we begin to integrate all these learning opportunities, begin to document that learning, synthesize that data so that, you know, people have access to it? If I'm a teacher working with a child, I'd like to know the kind of growth that's happening or not happening in a summer program or an after-school program. Have you thought about the systems that are required to begin to support a much more expanded, modernized public education system?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of interesting organizations out there who have started to look at this, like the Mastery Transcript Consortium is one that comes to mind, LRNG with their digital badging. So there are, yeah. are different groups that are starting to think about how do you look at credentialing or competencies?
Yeah.
How do you create kind of a digital platform to allow those to stack and grow and a place to hold them over time? And so there, that is not our area of expertise at RESCO. We're not tech people in that way. So we are looking at some of these options as ways for kids to start to capture what they've experienced. But that said, I also see some value, and one of the things we have started to do is have youth that we work with articulate what they see as the competencies and learnings that they've gathered in some of these out-of-school experiences, so that we also have youth that can start naming some of these things that are of value to them. They have, you know, currency for them, but then how does that also relate to what has currency for people who might hire them or want them to enroll in their programming over time? So this is an area that I want to do a lot more with at Reschool that we just haven't had the opportunity to do yet, but it's on the horizon. And we also have a game that we created, which is now being rebranded called Revolve. It was a prototype for the last several years that people around the country have played and gave us feedback on. But the whole purpose of the game is actually to live a year in the life of a young adult, like a teen or teen into your, you know, kind of early 20s, who's navigating kind of this world of learning and resources and challenges that happen to you. And we have a learning framework that you capture those competencies in at the end of the experience. So that is a resource that we can definitely share more about later with you.
Well, that sounds exciting. Maybe as this movement expands, there'll be more tech companies coming in to see the opportunity to figure out how to collect data and make it available to the right people at the right times while protecting privacy, of course. Talk some more about equity, because obviously that's a huge challenge. I've seen some statistics showing that over the last several years, the amount of out-of-school learning spending that families are doing who have the money is expanding pretty dramatically. So when you talk about inequities that are expanding right now, it's really the out-of-school learning investments that families are making, that some families can make and some families can't make. As we move into this world where more and more learning is happening outside of school, and even being documented and used for official purposes, how in the world do we deal with the equity issues and not having this all expand inequity as opposed to reduce inequity?
Right, that's a huge question. You know, we've thought a lot about this, and you know, we've been raising money through philanthropy for the last several years to resource out-of-school learning for kids that are part of our network or affiliated with organizations in our network, as to try and to test kind of what it looks like when families have access to resources. What are they spending it on? How much do they need? What are the kinds of experiences they access? And then how does that impact their future directions in education? And it's been extremely positive. And so along with a growing coalition of organizations here in Colorado, we pursued over the last year a ballot initiative that we were going to be putting on the 2020 ballot, which unfortunately got derailed by COVID. But the purpose of that ballot initiative was to say that we understand and know that the bucket of money that's already funding K-12 education is stretched pretty thin here in Colorado. And it wasn't politically feasible nor probably the right play to try to say, let's take some of that money and like use it now for this out of school time. And so we were looking at how do you resource another bucket of funding that would allow for public resources so that more kids could access it than through philanthropy and layer that on top of the existing K-12 budget, which would allow for a much more expansive education system, which is ultimately our goal, so that kids would have resources to access the learning that happens in school and learning that happens outside of school. And so that kind of a model that we still think is a strong idea is something that I think other states could look at going forward. That's one idea. And this summer, we, along with some other funders and organizations in Colorado, have created an education innovation fund for this time during COVID to resource learning, remote learning. And so it has two main components. One of them is innovation, funding innovative ideas that are stemming from communities that are responding to the remote learning needs that parents probably will need in the fall and coming up with new solutions. And the other part of the fund that Reschool is playing a larger role in is what we call learning dollars, which is we've created a fund where parents can apply for learning dollars up to $1,000 per family to resource learning for their kids over the summer and leading into the fall outside of school. So it's mimicking what the initiative would have done, but right, through philanthropy.
Not to create controversy here, but as you were talking, what popped into my brain was some of these funding lawsuits that have occurred over the last 25 or 30 years. I'm wondering if we really conceptually begin to understand that public education really extends well beyond brick and mortar schools 180 days. If there's an equity lawsuit in a state somewhere saying, hey, here's the real world. The real world is there's tremendous gaps are occurring out of school. And if we don't begin to invest, our concepts of equity in our state constitutions are meaningless. I mean, we're being hypocrites if we pretend that, you know, I mean, have you thought about that at all? I'm not trying to make news here in the podcast, but I mean, is that?
No, I haven't actually thought about that, but I really think it's a good idea. I did a lot with school finance earlier in my career, but it wasn't obviously thinking of this larger pool of experiences. But you're right, because the book Our Kids by Robert Putnam, it's a little old now, but I still think it's as relevant now. It's probably even more relevant now, is that wealthier families are spending thousands of dollars more per year per kid than lower income families. And it's all to access this learning that is happening in places like sports programming, right, art, STEM, summer camps, travel, you know. And that is where kids develop their sense of self and their passions and their interests and their social networks expand beyond their neighborhoods. And those are the things that I think if we don't invest in them, as the Putnam book did show, it has long-term implications over time on a person's future well-being and economic, you know, success.
Yeah, and those programs are really more expensive than people realize. I mean, I've helped fund, you know, low-income kids in various after-school activities. I mean, Pop Warner would cost me $600 or $700 per kid, you know.
Yeah.
And, so people don't realize, but the experiences are amazing, and so many kids don't have access to those. So it'll be interesting to see how this debate unfolds in the next couple of years if people start thinking about equity beyond simply the 180-day school day and start thinking about funding in other areas.
I mean, I think the moment we're in right now, it's becoming very apparent that, you know, kids who have access to resources, whether that's financial resources or technology or other kinds of people in their community who they can lean into, and kids who don't are definitely missing out right now in this moment of COVID.
Yeah, I know you guys aren't a tech company, but I have a certain fascination right now, obsession that I want to ask you about as it relates to equity. And it comes from the fact that, you know, I live in St. Petersburg, Florida. We're about 10, 50 minutes from the beach. My wife and I both taught in an inner city school, St. Pete High. And there were large numbers of kids who had grown up in St. Pete who had never been to the beach. It was 10 minutes away. It was just outside their experience. I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Julie Young, the other day in Arizona, and Julie was saying, same thing happens out there. Kids have never been to the Grand Canyon. I mean, the Grand Canyon is such an amazing experience. You know, it's just life-changing. You just can't show up at the Grand Canyon and not be blown away by it. So, but there's no ways to to fund all that. And I'm wondering if things like virtual reality and other kinds of technology can allow people to experience things like the Grand Canyon or things, you know, coral reef diving, et cetera, have you thought at all about how we can use technology to begin allow to have kids have experiences they normally couldn't have because their families don't have the resources?
Yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. I mean, we've seen even just this summer when things shut down, like the zoo here in Denver, as well as some of the national museums like in New York and other places, were opening up their doors in a virtual way for kids to have those kinds of experiences. And I've seen that with travel, and National Geographic, I think, has some things that do that. So I love that. And I also love getting kids out and experiencing those things. Yeah. I was the founder of an expeditionary learning charter school here in Denver that is like 22 years old now. And it's a city school, diverse, a lot of low-income kids who hadn't had experiences like that previously are going camping and gaining leadership and outdoors skills, and have gone on then and incorporate that into their lives. So I see it as both, you know, and I think some of the out-of-school providers like Outward Bound, or here we have Avid for Adventure, some of those kind of groups provide those experiences in an outdoor sense, and as well as some of the arts programs too. So I like both.
One other question I was curious about, have you given a lot of thought about how the modernization of public education, the way you're articulating it, is going to affect the role of the teacher, teacher training? I mean, I don't know about Colorado, but in Florida, you're hearing a lot of teachers say, you know, not really sure if I signed up for this, you know. I'm not, you know, I think they're expecting a big wave of retirements, early retirements, between, you know, hybrid learning and just all this change. A lot of people just didn't sign up for it. So I'm curious if you're seeing that same thing, and what kind of teacher training you think is going to be necessary as we transition to a whole new kind of public education system.
Absolutely. We've thought about this concept of an educator marketplace for quite some time here, where you have experts and educators in the community who maybe are playing different kinds of roles than the traditional classroom teacher. And there's a great website platform that's been created called Community Share that I think it illustrates how you could bring experts from the community who are artists and scientists together with kids and educators to learn together and kind of like a matchmaking kind of program. But now, you know, what's interesting in light of the COVID pandemic is I too am hearing that there are people who don't want to go back to a classroom for various reasons. They might have a compromised health situation. They just don't feel comfortable, or they don't want to teach in that way, you know, quite frankly. And so I think that there's opportunities for either communities or even schools and districts to really rethink the roles that are required right now, and how do you plug people into the right roles. So for example, a retired or a teacher who is perhaps health compromised and is worried about going back into a classroom with children could play a role that's different, like working specifically as what we would call a learner advocate, which is touching base with a number of kids on a regular basis to ensure that they're getting what they need, and helping them to bundle together additional resources to have continuity of learning. Or you could have, you know, someone in that capacity, or retired teachers even for that matter, working with new teachers to do onboarding in a more virtual kind of setting, or in very small groups that are more COVID friendly. So, and then you can have like teachers that could form cooperatives outside of like a traditional district structure and specialize in math instruction, for example. And there's so many different, I think, ways that things could play out. And I'm wondering if the moment of the, you know, that we're in is going to be an impetus for people to start to get creative. But the fund I mentioned earlier is partly geared towards those kinds of ideas. Does a group of teachers have an idea that they want to pursue right now, or a group of parents, or some combination? Then tell us, and we'll give you some seed funding to get it going.
Have you thought anything about parent training too? I mean, because as parents take on a much more important role in terms of the formal public education, which is happening now all over the country, I just, as you were talking, that popped into my head. Have you thought at all about kind of resources we provide for parents as they take on a little more of this quasi formal teacher role?
Yeah, I mean, we run our Learner Advocate Networks, which is a benefit essentially for employees in a couple of hospitals. And part of the role of the advocate is to be kind of a resource and provide that kind of information to help parents build their capacity and confidence to navigate the system. So we've done some of that, and we're obviously doing a lot more of it right now. But we also see a really interesting evolution of parents, especially ones who we've worked with over time, but others we've identified in the community, who already do that naturally within their own networks. And so we're also looking at a way to invest in a more like community-based learner advocate approach, where families support families in navigating the system and don't necessarily need to rely always on an expert of an educator or a person in the system. So I think both are important, but that's how we're kind of looking at it right now.
You know, when I went and started graduate school in the 70s, all we talked about was competency-based education. You know, that was the fantasy. Can we ever get to a world where we move away from the Henry Ford one-size-fits-all assembly line education that we'd had since the, you know, mid-19th century to a real customization kind of system to meet the needs of each kid? Do you think finally, give me some hope here, Amy, do you think maybe we're to a point now where all these changes might move us toward a much more of a competency-based, customized public education system?
I mean, I hope so, but I still feel like there's a lot of people holding on to the old way of doing it, you know, just because it's comfortable and that's how they know what they know how to do. But there are bright lights, like the Lindsay School District in California has definitely moved more in this direction. I was reading an article today, I think in the 74, about the Cleveland School District, which is actually embracing a more mastery and competency-based approach. So that's inspiring to see. I actually think the interesting way that we can start to flesh that out might be by focusing on this out-of-school space, because it's not, you're not competing then with the way that we've done it before or the way that we've, you know, organized what outcomes look like. You can start almost from scratch and design it the way you want it. And so that's a little bit of how we're going to tackle it, I think, is in that space, because it's I don't know, there's less challenges with it. I guess I would just encourage us to continue to look at families and learners as the unit of change. You know, if you look at groups of learners and their aspirations and goals and interests, and have systems and ways of organizing our systems at play that allow people to access what they need and at different points along the way, and have the confidence and the capacity to, and the power, for quite frankly, to be able to do that, I believe that over time, that is what will shift and transform our systems. Because if we continue to focus on institutions as a unit of change, then we have to wait and have the kids, you know, fit into those later. And that's what we've been doing for a long, long time. And it's still not really working as the way we hoped.
I think that's right on. I thought for a long time that the system is way too supplier focused and not demand focused. In most markets in the real world, it's demand that really drives innovation. But because families haven't had any choices, they haven't been able to, you know, send signals to the suppliers about kind of innovations they're looking for. But as choice programs expand, as out of school options expand, as we figure out how to give more spending power into the hands of families, particularly low income families, historically haven't had that power. I'm hoping that their voices will start to drive innovation on the educators, on the provider side. So I think that's right on. I think eventually that's really going to be a game changer.